Sweet dreams are made of these. Who am I to disagree? I traveled the world and the seven seas. Everybody's looking for something. Some of them want to use you. Some of them want to be used by you. Some of them want to abuse you. Some of them want to be abused.
That's perfect, Max. That was perfect. You. Thanks very much, man. I don't think anybody's ever done that one. You would think that a lot of people would have sang that after hundreds and hundreds of shows.
It's an amazing song. I love it. And I had it with me, not because I don't remember it, just because, you know, in front of the camera is a little bit excited here.
Thanks for reaching out and thanks for coming on the show, man.
You know what? I saw your show. Thank you very much for having me, first of all.
Yeah, no problem.
I saw your show online and, you know, I literally think you are the Joe Rogan of construction. I love it.
Yeah.
And I love the way you conduct your, you know, your show. And I said, let's try and see if we can get on it.
Sit down and talk.
Yeah.
We let the conversation go wherever it's going to go. But I've got a lot of questions for you about your business and how you've built it. And you guys do amazing work and it looks amazing. So I'm like, I like speaking to like-minded people like that and just try to get some insight into your business and we'll just go from there.
Perfect. I mean,
let me share the information. Max is here from Acadia Design Consultants. You can find them on IG under Acadia_DC. And also, you can reach them at info@acadiadc.ca. And their website is www.acadiadc.ca. And their phone number, 647-478-9292. They also have a YouTube channel. How long have you guys been doing that one?
That's something new that we're trying. Yeah, okay. And I'm enjoying it very much. But yeah,
getting used to the cameras and everything.
Yeah. You should definitely check it out. You're probably gonna say those guys are amateurs, but
no. Everybody, I like anybody who captures construction in a unique way and just presenting it. You know.
So I'll tell you what. Doing what I do for so long, I just decided that it would be great to actually educate homeowners, educate people about construction a little bit more, not just let the contractor come in and. Whatever gonna happen, gonna happen. What is a good contractor? You know, I'm doing it for almost 20 years now. What's a good consulting firm? Where should you start? Should you call a contractor right away? Should you call a consultant? When you're buying a house, what should you do? So overall, all this information that I believe is very important information, and I find that people are not making right decisions. People are not
looking... Or even answering those questions.
Yeah.
Truthfully.
Yeah, and people are not looking at construction as an investment. Which I do. I think that it's the same as investing into the stock market. You're not just going to invest into something without doing your homework.
Of course.
Why would you just call a contractor for the price without knowing what is it they're doing, how to do it right, and everything that has to do with it? But pretty much a little bit
about
that.
I agree with you, totally. Let me do a quick shout out. I'm wearing Chris's shirt, Ren Contracting. He's a good guy. He's been on the show a couple of times. He's out in Barrie area or North North End over there. He's a framer doing really well. He had a slow, as a lot of people had a slow turn during the winter months, but kind of typical for framers at that point. But he's seen some promise for this year. So hopefully things get a little bit better. Other than that, how did you get started in construction? What's your background, Max?
Perfect. My background is Lithuanian.
Okay.
Which is kind of Lithuania. I don't know if people know that, but...
I've had somebody else on this show that's from there, too. I'm trying to remember.
So,
yeah.
So Lithuania actually is the first country that got apart from the Soviet Union.
Okay. Back in... This would have been...
Back in 1990.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I was born there, and so I'm here in Canada since the 2000. And I'm in the construction industry from day one. Many people don't even know I started as a... Like a tiling apprentice.
Okay.
Yeah. So I can install tiles.
You're a big guy getting down on the floor and doing tiles, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, back then I wasn't that big and I was a lot younger doing that. You know, it's funny. There is a saying that people that do tiles always, there's a question they ask, what did I ever do to God that I have to stand on my knees all my life?
I've never heard it that way before, but it's actually a good question to be asking him.
Yeah. So I started doing tiles and then... With the time, kind of got into doing installation of curtain walls and windows and doors.
Okay.
So, architectural systems. Loved every moment of doing it. Never thought quitting what I was doing. But one day an interesting situation happened. I got into an accident.
Car accident?
Car accident.
Okay.
Which after this, I realized I cannot use ladders anymore. And I was afraid of heights all of a sudden.
After the accident?
Yeah.
It just happened?
It just happened. And
you started to climb one and started realizing?
Yeah, and I saw my legs kind of getting shaky a little bit and all that.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, because when something like that happened, and it's not a lot about construction, but when something like that happens, you start thinking. And you realize that you're not immortal.
Oh, of course.
And you realize that things can happen. You know, and with that happening, I kind of was rethinking my path. What am I going to do? Clearly, without being able to go on and off a ladder, you're not going to be able to install any windows.
No. Yeah, you're going to have a lot of difficulty.
Yeah, so decided to go for architectural studies. Did that. Enjoyed that. Loved it. Was shocked realizing how many things that myself or other people in the construction industry did was wrong.
Like what? What's the first thing that pops in
your
mind?
Oh, man. It's funny. It was Architecture 101. We're sitting in class and we're learning how to water manage a house.
Okay.
Right? You need to have a barrier and how everything works.
Building envelope stuff.
Of course.
Okay.
And I'm sitting there and, well, I don't know if you know, but every window installer, when they when they demo a window, you would have a lot of barrier pretty much there and you would cut it off. And you would install a new window.
Yep.
And I started thinking, how many windows don't have barriers in there?
I would say the majority of them.
Exactly.
I know.
And that was the number one thing where I started thinking, oh my God, I thought I'm the best contractor in the world, which I think I was a great contractor. I was a pretty good contractor. But I realized how many things were taught as an apprentice that was done incorrectly.
Yeah.
So yeah, and I went through architecture school since then, trying to make sure that everything is done correctly, everything is done right. Opened Acadia as Acadia Drafting, not even Acadia Design Consultants yet.
Okay.
As Acadia Drafting, while still being in school, did first couple of building permits for clients. Was referred by my professor.
Single family dwellings kind of
thing? Yeah, like decks and, you know, walk out from basements and all that kind of small stuff. And eventually it's evolved and started teaching in George Brown College Architectural Studies, realizing that,
the student became the teacher.
Yeah, okay. Realizing that the industry needs education.
Yes, very much.
And as somebody who loves to educate, that's pretty much fast forward to Acadia Design Consultants today. Having so many clients going through us, I realized that I think I should dedicate a little bit of time to educate homeowners what to do to get a good contractor, somebody who's actually reliable, somebody who is would take responsibility for their job and not just, oh, you don't like it the way I do it, bye.
Yep.
Somebody will not be too agreeable, for an example, because I don't know if you agree with me, but I believe that agreeable contractor is not the best contractor. It's just a contractor who's trying to get the job.
That's a very good point. Yeah.
So a contractor should know sometimes to say, you know what, I'm sorry, but that's not a good idea. That's not something I would suggest you to do.
It's not a challenge. It's a discussion.
Not at all. Of course. Yeah. Of course. And I also believe that if the two parties don't like that discussion or believe that, oh, you as a contractor, you don't want to do what I ask you to do, I'm going to get somebody else, that's fine. That's fine. You don't want to do something that might be a problem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's how it began.
Yeah.
And now what is it like today? Because you guys are handling a lot of details now. So are you taking the client right from concept, drawings, permits, construction, finishing?
Yeah. Okay. So Acadia Design Consultants, with the time clients were... A lot of clients were telling me, oh, Max, you make it sound so simple. And eventually clients started asking me the question, can you build it for us? We trust you. You clearly know what you're doing. Build it for us. And approximately, I would say around 10 years ago, that's what we started doing. And it works pretty well. And today, Acadia Design Consultants is kind of design, but also a build company. We're doing interior alterations. We're finishing basements. We're doing garden laneway suites.
Yeah, I saw that. Do you enjoy them?
You know what? I love it. I love
challenging
it.
Challenging though, right? Are they really challenging?
Well, not really. If you have the right, systems intact that work, and I mean engineering wise,
yeah,
it's pretty simple. It's challenging because I find that when you are building a garden suite, it's like, or not even a garden suite, or a laneway suite.
Yep.
Garden suite is fairly simple. A laneway suite, it's like you're not only working with the homeowner, you're working with the neighbors.
Yeah, you have to. You're right on the line.
They're all worried about, okay, what's going to happen to our garage right here? What kind of construction you're going to do? We don't want it to collapse. You're building new foundations right next to an existing foundation.
Yeah.
But of course, as you know, there's a lot of ways and a lot of engineering systems that you can use in order to make sure that everything is intact. Luckily, knock on wood, no problems yet.
Well, it's ironic that a lot of those, because I do like the laneways in Toronto specifically. Mm. And for the many years, homeowners didn't really pay that much attention to the garages. And you've seen them. I've seen them all, where they started just collapsing. And we saw roofs being curved.
Yeah.
And, you know, if they were wood structured ones, they were just rotting out.
Oh, those are out completely, yeah.
But they should be converted. They should all be converted to laneway suites and then give that opportunity to have like an income property for you, for your business.
Of course.
For your home. And but it's not until you start doing one on that one laneway stretch that the neighbors start, okay, well, hang on. I've got a question. What's going to happen?
Yeah. So structure? Funny enough, we were, I believe, in one of the areas of Toronto, we were the first company that actually got a permit for laneway.
Really?
Yeah. And that was before.
This was how far back now?
That was, I would want to say that was in 2019 or 20, just when the bylaw came out.
When they came in. Okay. Yeah.
So what happened? It was so funny. So the bylaw came out. But nobody in Toronto really knew how to approach it.
Yeah.
So we submitted this application for a laneway. And now they're thinking, all the departments, okay, how do we approach it? Is it a development? Is it not? Because I don't know if you know, but when you're having more than, back then, not anymore, there's a new bylaw for that as well. But back then, if you're having more than two apartments on a property, that's considered to be an apartment building.
An apartment building.
So now, automatically, if you build something like that, you are a developer. And
so if the main dwelling already has a certain amount of units in it.
So they used to allow only one secondary unit.
Okay.
Period. And then the laneway bylaw came out.
Yep.
But the laneway bylaw came out as another residential unit that is allowed on the lot. But kind of, is it a triplex now? Is it not? Do we approach you as a developer or not? So I remember
today is considered. It's
today is a regular residential unit. Nothing
it's a
special.
Separate unit to the.
It's
main
a separate
unit,
but it's allowed.
Okay. But
well, it was allowed back then as well as the bylaw. But City of Toronto didn't know how to assume that bylaw.
The definition of it.
Yes, and okay. They wanted to charge our client development fee, which is tons of money and everything.
Yeah.
And I remember involving a lawyer.
To get
that's
some
something
answers.
That I hope nobody else had to, pretty much to have. To kind of explain to the municipality that the bylaw came out and it's not a development, it should be allowed for residential homeowners to build and all that. Eventually we won and we got the first permit for this.
How long did that take, that suite. Process to get? Did it add something?
So just to put a disclaimer out there, right now it would take a couple of months. But back then it took approximately a year and 2 months.
Wow.
To because every department, they didn't know how to approach it.
They didn't know how to react.
A new
to
bylaw, how do we approach it? Is it a development? Is it not? You know, do we charge development fee? Do we not? You know, now you have a bylaw that says you can go up to four apartments on a property, on a residential property. So okay. Clearly when you're building, even if you have, let's say, a basement apartment and you're building a laneway, you're fine. It's a third one.
At Royal Door and Trim Supplies Limited, they're not just delivering doors and trim, they're delivering possibilities. Proudly serving Toronto and the GTA with top quality interior doors and trim for every residential and commercial project. With 50 years of experience, expert craftsmanship, and a service that goes above and beyond, your space won't just look good, it'll feel exceptional. Visit royaldoor.ca, email them at sales@royaldoor.ca, or call them at 905-669-2954. Follow them on social at royal_door_LTD and discover why quality, knowledge, and experience reign at Royal. Royal Door and Trim Supplies, quality since 1975 and proudly Canadian. This message is proudly supported by The Construction Life.
It's a third unit, right?
So if you have a main dwelling on a street, you've got a basement apartment, and then you've got your main dwelling, and then you could possibly have two. You can have the main floor and the second floor and a basement. And yeah, you can do a laneway. That's the max. You have four now.
Four, yeah. Okay. Yeah, because clearly the city of Toronto, although increasing density, that's the future plan.
Yeah.
Well, again, we're talking about Toronto. It's laneways is...
Laneways are opening up in other municipalities as well.
Yeah, so it's Ontario. It's an Ontario bylaw, right? Yeah, not Toronto. Yeah. But because it started in Toronto, that's where the example is from. But yeah, many municipalities right now are going towards increased density. Yeah.
Nobody's building, I don't think anybody, or would you be allowed to build a basement in the laneway unit?
Yes, and we have quite a few of those. Really? We actually built one already, and one is on the way.
Are you still putting a vehicle on the ground level, or is
no? You don't have to put a vehicle. So what happens is, you can put a vehicle, but of course you have to reinforce the floor.
Yeah, so the concrete's different, but yeah, you can still put a basement unit underneath that vehicle slab.
Not a unit. So the whole idea of laneways and garden suites, yeah, I'm gonna look at them as one. They are considered right now as a single dwelling, single family dwelling,
separate from the main dwelling.
Yeah, but single. You can have only one family in there, meaning one kitchen, one stove.
Got it.
Okay? But we did have a garden suite built where you have a separate entrance, where you have, you know, two-story above, and we had bars on different levels, and, you know.
So you can do that? Because it's...
Building code-wise, yes. As long as it's not looking as... if it's a many family dwelling.
But you would technically have somebody in the basement living and somebody living upstairs?
You could, yeah. We literally have units that were built already with two bedrooms in the basement.
Huh.
Yes, with a bar, with a bathroom, and a mechanical room, a separate entrance. And by the way, sorry that I'm cutting you off, just to let you know, what people don't realize that in certain areas, especially in the Toronto area, a laneway is limited by size, of course, of the lot itself. But a garden suite, for example, can be up to almost 2,000 square feet.
So you can encroach on some of the backyard. You can go. So technically, would you go larger on a garden suite than a laneway suite, footprint wise?
Yes.
And because
laneway usually limited by size
of the garage.
The width of the lot.
The width of the lot.
Right? It's usually the width of the garage is the width of the lot.
So if it's a double car garage, that's your max width, generally speaking, pretty around much. 20 feet.
But you can still
so.
go
but
forward.
But it can go into the yard.
Yeah.
Do you not have limitations on how much of the yard you can go into based on what has to be remaining for the main unit?
You do. And actually right now they were revised for the better. So it used to be if you're building a one-story garden suite laneway suite, you would need to be minimum 5 meters away from the main
15 feet, okay,
from the main dwelling. If you build a two-story, you have to be 7.5 meter away, meters away.
Okay, a little
bit so further. the idea is really fire separation, right? Now it actually went down, it went to 4 meters. So
recently?
Yeah,
okay,
just pretty much in the beginning of the year. So you can actually build a larger garden suite, larger laneway.
12 feet. Mm-hmm. 12 feet between mm-hmm. units. It's not mm-hmm. a lot, but you make the garden suite bigger. You make the laneway suite bigger as well, too.
Yeah. There was another rule.
They keep on revising the rules?
Yeah, because, again, the first rules that came out kind of didn't make sense. I can give you an example of something that cost a lot of money that we did. So... I don't know if you know, but a garden suite would need to have all four sides would need to have angular plane.
Yeah.
So all the walls cannot be higher than 4 meters.
Yeah.
Everything above 4 meters has to be an angular plane.
Yeah.
So if you're doing a second story, now you have to have your walls, yeah, which is the roof, going 45 degrees inside. Now the problem with it is you want to maximize your space. So when you have all four walls with an angular plane of 45 degrees, what actually supports this top of flat roof above? I actually had to create specifically for that a custom truss, steel truss that would kind of support the rest of the roof and manipulate kind of the structure to work with it.
So it was an engineer truss?
Yeah.
And it worked?
100%.
You an engineer too?
No, I'm not an engineer.
So you have an engineer who works with you?
I employ, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
So, but yeah, but now it's not necessary. Now, no need for angular planes anymore. Therefore, you can just have regular point loads on the exterior walls.
Oh, so the angular question that was brought up by the city was strictly for a structural to bring it in. But you've come up with an engineer truss that brought it back out?
No. I came up with an engineer truss that would support the point loads.
Intersection, so, where they connect.
Yeah, exactly.
Got it.
Which was difficult because I don't even know how to explain that, but usually roof would be sitting on exterior walls as to support it.
Yeah.
But when you have your angular planes from all sides, the roof is a little bit more inside.
Yeah.
So what exactly is going to support it? You got snow load, you got... Yeah. The loads of the roof itself. So for that, I had to prepare a custom truss. But as soon as the city got rid of those bylaws, which is great, they realized that they just make affordable housing not very affordable.
Yeah.
It became much, much simpler. And those bylaws came in just this.
What's the max height that you're allowed these days?
So now, depending where, but pretty much 6.3 meters, which is two-story.
Two stories. So you can't, so that's the question, is that I'm waiting for them to approve putting roof decks on there so that space could be used for, you know what I'm talking about, right?
I know exactly what you're talking about.
I'm sure your clients have been asking for that, right?
And I'm also telling clients, you first get the occupancy and then you do what you want to do.
Well, you would just have to somehow get your two stories and then you have to have a parapet, right?
The bylaw is not there yet because really what you're doing is you need to put railings on the roof.
Yeah.
You gotta have another stair and there is a fire code questions that come in play.
But
there.
It makes sense for the unit of the lane or the garden.
100%.
That's their backyard. They could be enjoying it, right?
Yeah.
You're a little higher.
You can put a barbecue in there. You can build... you know, a little pergola something, you know, like, of course, with a canopy or for a barbecue, of course.
Cost-wise, though, Max, because I haven't built a laneway, and I know a few companies that are doing laneways. Mm-hmm. Are they not getting a little more expensive to do them per square foot kind of thing? And I'm not a believer of per square foot. I'm just saying that if you were to build a regular dwelling, mm-hmm, compared to a laneway or a garden suite, square footage-wise, they're higher. They're more expensive.
They are more expensive. I'll be even the devil's advocate to agree with you to say it's not always makes sense if this property is your forever home, it might be an expensive way of getting a secondary unit because I'm not sure how many, it's probably going to take around 15 to 20 years to pay off.
Yeah, I would say.
But there are also other reasons why garden suites and laneways are amazing for different reasons. First of all, multi-generational home.
Yep.
Second of all, I'm not going to go too far into it because, like, for example, I have a client right now where we're designing a garden suite for their son that went through an accident. And that's going to be a fully handicapped.
Like a long-term facility.
Approved house for him.
Which makes a lot of sense.
So, and they need to be there all the time. So that's another reason why that's an amazing opportunity. Because imagine if it wasn't there, they live in a three-story midtown house where you wouldn't be able to accommodate the house for handicap purposes. All of a sudden, they have an option. It's an expensive option. But wouldn't you do the same thing for your kids?
It would be. And that, all that really means is you're lowering, I guess, the unit so you could be at grade level and you could have a ramp to go in.
No, we're actually putting a lift, an elevator.
Oh, you're putting a lift?
Yes, sir.
Oh, really?
Yeah. We're making sure that you have wide enough staircase, and we're putting a... I think you are... Not, it's difficult to imagine because you're thinking to yourself, two-car garage, what can you put in there?
Yeah.
There's a lot of space to work with. A lot
of space. Mm-hmm. Generally, what is it, 20 by 20?
Yeah, 20 by 20, pretty much.
But I know, you're Lithuanian, so it's like metric.
European style.
I know.
No. I'm actually metric, not big. I'm more towards feet and inches. But bylaw-wise, we have to look into metric. Because Canada is, at the end of the day, is a metric country. So when you submit for permits, everything is metric. And when you're reading the bylaw, it comes in as metric as well. So that's why when I'm discussing zoning bylaws, I go by metric. But everything else, when we design the buildings themselves, of course.
Feet and inches. The metric for the door opening for wheelchair accessibility?
So I'll
tell point what?
Not a metric, I'll tell you in feet. That's actually 36 inches.
36 inches,
36
huh?
inches, yes.
Same with entry doors into other areas of the house?
Yeah, so clear 36 inches.
Clear 36. Yeah.
Which means usually you would have the opening as 38.
Yeah, because you've got to factor in door stops and things.
A lot of people make that mistake and they get the door 36, which eventually makes the opening to 34. You will see an inspector and they will tell you, out.
It doesn't, yeah.
Yeah.
So this particular unit, I guess you're also putting an elevator in there too.
Not only that we're putting an elevator, we're creating this elevator because unfortunately, well, as I said, there's a lot of space, but not that much space, okay? Yeah. We got to be creative. So to accommodate for it as a corridor, we're going to have two doors on each side so that you can go through to the staircase to be able to go above if you don't want to use the elevator.
Well, because code-wise, you still require a staircase.
A staircase, absolutely.
The elevator is a secondary item. It's not a primary, but it would become the primary for the individual who's needed for the wheelchair.
Yep.
Yeah, but it's still possible. That must be an interesting floor plan then. That's a challenge to draw that out.
Yeah. And actually, we drew it out and then we, I'm not going to take the credit. The client was smart enough to use handicap consultants to make sure, even though we can do it by code, but they didn't just want to make sure that it's right by code, but also to make sure that it's going to be comfortable.
Yep.
Right, for the child. So yeah, we used code consultants to make sure that everything we've done was actually right. Sorry, handicap code consultant. And yeah, and now we approved this plan a month ago and it's in the city for permits.
So you're and hopefully starting soon.
Yeah.
The only handicap consultant I know is Julie Schotter.
Mm.
Yeah, yeah, so I had her on a show a long, long time ago, back in the audio days. She's great. She knows a lot of, and she does a lot of consulting for commercial and also residential.
Yeah, because every once in a while we use it when we do commercial building, for example. We would use it for corridors, for... There's so many...
She educated me on so many things, because she actually, her first project was... Unfortunately, after her accident that she had, she renovated her house and she had to build the kitchen a certain way, the bathroom a certain way, and she started learning all these little things that were accommodating to her situation, but still had to be friendly for the rest of the family at a regular height situation,
So,
but it was really educational to speak with her about that.
Yeah.
And you don't really pay attention until you actually speak to somebody and you walk into a commercial, when you walk into either restaurants or even public facilities and how it's laid out, how it's designed. But yeah, no, it's pretty
fascinating. Why is it such a big bathroom? Why do you have all this handicap bars and all that? How exactly does that work? It doesn't make sense until you start understanding what it's for and what all the thinking behind it.
At Maple Overhead Garage Doors, they're not just opening doors, they're opening possibilities. Serving the greater Toronto area with top quality garage doors in steel, wood, fiberglass, flush mount, and full view aluminum, Maple delivers style, strength, and satisfaction for both residential and commercial spaces. With years of experience, unmatched craftsmanship, and the next level service, your neighbors will be jealous, but your garage door will speak for itself. Visit www.maplegaragedoors.com, email them at maplegaragedoors@hotmail.com, or even call them at 905-738-9231. Follow them on social at Maple Doors and discover why quality, knowledge, and experience live at Maple. Maple Overhead Garage Doors, built to impress, made to last. This message is proudly supported by The Construction Life. What's your favorite part of the construction process? Drawing it or building it? Or does it depend on the project?
So I don't know. Overall, construction is my passion. I think educating. It's not even about drawing. I really love the wow factor of my clients when I kind of give my input into something. They're like, oh, we didn't think about it. You know, I was teaching also in George Brown College, literally, because it was a waste of opportunity for me. Not really, I wasn't really making anything out of it, but I really enjoyed the fact that I was educating people to do the right things. So I think education, when I see people learn something new, I think that's what kind of highlights my day. Yeah.
And that pretty much happens on every single job, right? Because every single job is custom. Every single job is different.
And also when I come in on a job, you know, like, you've seen those situations before. You come in, you talk to the contractor, they're like, oh, that cannot be done. And I would just grab the hammer, grab the drill, and they're like, oh, you can actually do what? That's something that I love as well. You
know? They take the time and effort to explain to you that it can't be done, but this is construction. Anything begins.
Anything. I also tell my clients, because the question is always, can that be done? Everything can be done. The question is, how much are you willing to pay for it?
Time and money.
Straightforward.
That's all it is.
You know, and if straightforward doesn't work, maybe somebody else will tell you they can do it for free.
Your crew, is it all subtrades or employees or a mix?
So we have mixed.
It's a mix. Yeah. Okay, yeah.
We have the office crew, of course, offsite management. We have some onsite management, and we have trades to work with as well.
How is the industry these days for you guys?
Well, it depends.
A little bit of a downturn, I guess, towards the end of last
year. So it's a little bit quieter, but I find that renovations are kind of moving on because people realize that we need to cherish this, what we have, and make that better. So, because many people cannot really, you know, get to something better and bigger. But yeah, we're trying to help a lot when it comes to renovations. We do some commercial construction, not as much as we used to do. We do a lot of fittings. So you would take a commercial unit,
okay,
like coffee shops and offices and that kind of stuff. Not building commercial per se, but like retail space, interior renovations in those.
So yeah, that like kind of those, there's always a time crunch.
Sorry?
There's always a time crunch on those. There's always like, we need to get it done as soon as possible because we need to open it up. When we open it up, we start making money. We need to start making money. So
I'll tell you what. The good thing that I love explaining my clients is, I think it's actually something that everybody should do, is scheduling.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have a schedule and everything has to be to the schedule. Usually, you and I both understand when something goes out of schedule is either because of change orders or stuff like that. So if there are no change orders, and don't get me wrong, I have quite a lot of projects where there are no change orders, we're pretty much on time. We like in within a week, couple of weeks here and there, but mostly we're on time.
I mean, that's all it is. It's just communication.
Communication, administration, making sure that all the trades know when they have to come in and making sure they're coming in. And that's also kind of, you know, the difference between us and me, myself, and my hammer kind of company, you know, where, you know, we have our schedule. We got to make sure that we are in within the schedule. Every week we are looking at it, if we're a little bit behind, we got to push on it. Yep. If we're a little bit in front, great, you know. But yeah, don't see the difference.
Everything runs smoothly when you actually have great communication with your clients and with your trades and everyone's on board. And the more information you can give both parties, the more information that gets moved faster.
Yeah.
So it's really, you get a little bit of stumbling blocks when the clients start making too many changes, but you start questioning, why are all these changes coming up?
Yeah.
Because they would have been addressed or discussed during the drawing process, during the preliminary stages of things, right?
I find not only that, I agree with that 100%, but also I find that when a client kind of, for many reasons, there are so many reasons that could happen, but for some reason stops trusting you as a contractor.
Yeah.
Right? For And doesn't matter whether you're right or wrong. If there is a lack of communication a little bit, yeah, that's going to create a problem. Otherwise, as you said, if everything is as per the drawings, and because we're doing the drawings and everything in-house,
yeah,
and we quote everything in-house, and before we start the construction, everything is done in-house, we make sure that our client knows 100% what they're going to get.
Yep.
I'm not even going to lie to you. It's not anything above, anything below. It's exactly what they're going to get. And I explained to the client, so you're not going to see the situation with us of quoting something, giving you an exact quote without having drawings. If we don't do the drawings, we're not going to be able to quote.
How can you guys give them an exact number and also an exact schedule?
Yeah.
Because everybody wants to stay on the same train, right?
Yeah. Yeah. You
know, we understand changes, but we know how to factor in those changes and put mm-hmm. them together. But mm-hmm. we still have the original set of plans.
Mm-hmm.
And then we go from there. And then as you start constructing, they'll start noticing, well, maybe we want to move this. Maybe we want to move that or change this, which is bring up the communication. Yeah. Discuss it.
Yep.
And then it can be done.
Yeah. And I'm also explaining, people underestimate drawings overall and permits overall. And I'm explaining people that while you think the drawings, this is something that you just need to get in order to get the municipality happy to start the construction.
Yeah.
This is not that.
No.
Drawings are actually your contract and should be appreciated because it's your contract between you as a homeowner to the municipality. And also that's your contract between you and a contractor.
Yeah.
So at the end of the day, if everything is done as per these drawings, you should be a happy client.
Yep.
If everything is not, you should not be a happy client.
Yep.
So doing something or getting a contractor to quote something without drawings always going to raise questions after, oh, okay, but that we did not discuss. This we did not discuss. That came up after that in the drawings. When I quoted you, that wasn't there.
This kind of thing
should be avoided. And it's simple to avoid it. Why even get there? You know, or let me quote them a little bit, you know, oh, they want, let's say people would come to you and ask you, yeah, we want to finish our basement. Okay, I'll quote them to finish a basement, knowing that they want actually a secondary unit, knowing that secondary unit would need different materials, different drywall, as you know, type yep. X drywall, yep. Resilient channels, sound insulation,
yeah, yeah.
That will raise the construction by like 20% probably.
Yep. But,
you know, let's not talk about it right now. You know, construction starts. All that comes into the picture, and all of a sudden the contractor is like, oh no, you owe me more money now.
It's a good point. So then do you don't want to move forward on the drawings with the client until you're comfortable that the client understands that, listen, we've yes. done these drawings to the best that we're going to do them based on what you guys are asking us to do.
Yeah.
Now we're ready to submit to city.
Yes.
So let's get them into the city. And there's also little tricks that you can teach clients going, listen, we submit these drawings to begin with to get it started because we'll get this approval sooner. Then we can do some revisions at that point later on.
Yeah.
And overall, the timeline, it's faster to do it this way compared to doing it with all the changes and revisions already all yeah. put in there. And then all yeah. of a sudden you get the city putting a red flag yeah. here and there. And then it just delays the process
again. You got to have the permit on your window or door yeah. just to start your job.
Yeah.
And then all the small stuff, as you said, can be.
You know, the client knows, the city doesn't know that you're planning on this other revision,
which is perfectly fine.
Which is perfect. It is actually a smarter move to do.
And yeah, and another thing that I would say better to work with knowledgeable companies, design build, well, actual design builds, the ones that actually do the design and know building codes, which I would say I do, is because not only that you can do those revisions while construction, some contractors would worry about doing it because they're like, okay, what if this revision after that will not pass? What are we going to do? Demolish it back? Because you don't know whether the codes would allow it or not. In our case, we know.
Yeah, you would have a very good idea that this is going to definitely pass. And you can always challenge it, but you don't want to go with the Committee of Adjustment challenging
process. Well, no. Committee of Adjustment is not for codes. It's yeah. for
so bylaws.
It's for bylaws.
Yeah.
But you got, which, yeah. A knowledgeable contractor should be able to go to, you know, online and figure out setbacks and stuff like that. I agree with you 100%.
Are we going
to
be pushed into the bylaw yeah, section?
But I'm right? talking about building codes.
Yeah.
So at the end of the day, if your client, for you're doing an interior renovation and your client asks, oh, Max, you know what? You're a great guy. Let's do an addition. Max should be able to look at zoning bylaws, or if Max should be able to have a crew,
yes,
like an architect, somebody they yes. work with. On a certain level, you should have somebody that would tell you that within a day or two. But the question is, okay, what do you want in this addition? Oh, we want a bathroom, we want this, we want that, we want a couple of bedrooms. So a regular contractor would not know if they can build certain walls up front, not having that stamped, because that could be in the way of egress exits or escape routes. We do.
Yeah.
Because we have our consultants in office that right away pretty much revise all the plans, review it, tell us whether that's fine or not by code, and even if necessary, stamp it for inspections. Another thing is, of course, inspection letters, right? Or if you have a small change, I don't know if you know, well, you probably do.
I've built a thing or two.
Yeah. Part of my thing as trying to educate is, where do I begin? I will go as far back as necessary to explain. So
yeah.
I'm always giving everybody the benefit of the doubt that they might not know everything.
For sure, yeah.
But you know, when you need inspection letters, reports, and all that, this is something that we provide in within hours. We don't need to wait for, because everything is in house.
Plan it and schedule it, and the inspector comes by and everything's all done. Your objective at that point is to get the authorization.
Mm-hmm.
Once you get the authorization, most of the time, I think every inspector I've ever worked with or dealt with, it's done at the end of their workday. So they write it up there and then they email it off to you, and then you have it, and now you've moved on to the next stage.
Yeah.
I find it also interesting, Max, that I think the number one question I constantly hear about clients during the construction days that I was going on there is, can we move this wall a tiny bit here or a tiny bit there? It's always about moving a wall or something. And I would always just say, as long as it doesn't infringe on minimum setbacks on hallway space, staircase widths.
There you go.
Or if it's a load bearing wall, like those are the kinds of things. But if they're just partition walls,
fire safety.
Yeah, that's all it is, right? So then I said, you won't have to do a revision. We won't get our bum spanked because we're moving a wall. Yeah. That's not exactly me personally. I've never seen an inspector pull out the tape measure. I've never seen it.
I know.
Right? They know if the staircase is a little narrower. We know that.
No. So we had a tape measure pulled on a staircase.
Yeah,
we did. But that's just the basics. But I agree with you. They wouldn't check that everything is within the zonings, that the building height
is exactly on the drawing measurement. No. I've never seen that happen. Yeah.
But I'll explain to you why. Because it's really not very important.
Yeah.
What happened, and I agree with you 100%, like clients, I'll give an example to what you just said. We're building, again, a garden suite, and a client didn't like the fact that the room was a little bit too small. So we offered, well, how about we're not going to build, the closet that was designed there just to
work. Yeah.
You can get an IKEA piece or whatever, put anywhere you want.
Makes the room feel bigger.
Exactly. And now it's not... Your closet is not in one place. You can just put it wherever you want. So,
yes.
Which means you can also use your furniture in a different way or ever. So they were worried about, Max, I talked to somebody else before, and it's going to be a revision to the city. We're going to need to pay a lot of money. And I'm like, no.
It's not. Yeah.
So just to kind of summarize all that, if your change doesn't change any of the systems of the building,
yep.
You're fine.
Yep.
Meaning air systems.
Yes.
If your bedroom stays the same size, which is HVAC, supply, returns, and that kind of stuff. If you're not changing structural systems, point loads and beams, and if you're not changing architectural systems, which is building codes and mainly fire safety.
Yep.
You can do whatever. You can put another partition. You can remove another partition. Yes, some inspector probably would ask, well, just revise the floor plan, send it to me so that I can put it on file.
Yeah.
The plan. But
if you made that many changes, like when we're moving a bunch of partition
but not really
a
revision.
Walls, we can totally do that. But if you want to, but I just find it kind of interesting. That's the one question that always comes up. Can I move this a little bit here? Because they finally see it framed or something, or you either you chalk lined it out, you figured out exactly where everything's going to go, and they start walking through it and they're like,
realizing
it would be nice to just move it 6 inches that way. And if it, I mean, a typical Toronto house, moving 6 inches of a wall into the hallway space is sometimes challenging because you're usually on the minimum on the width of the hallway and the width of the staircase, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So at that point, you just let them know we can't move it that way because of these factors, right?
You know what people don't understand? You said minimum width and staircase. What people don't understand that, especially in Toronto, especially in those smaller lots, when you're starting to design a house, you, well, I wouldn't say everybody there, scratch that, me, myself. Yeah. When we start to design a house, we actually start with the staircase, where the stair is going to be, because stair is an opening.
Yes.
And an opening needs to have structure around it.
Yes.
So that would sometimes influence the rest of the structure. So yeah, usually when you're going into those smaller houses, you would see we would do minimum stair, 2 foot, 10 inches, you know, minimum corridor space if necessary, and then everything else.
Yeah. If you are a business owner, subcontractor, or client, you know that trust in this industry is huge. And Contract Alp helps build that. Not only do they get a solid contract for your projects, they built in an e-signature tool for you and your clients. The contract dashboard also has a digital live log that records every step of the project. Plus, a rate and review system for both the contractor and the client. This means more transparency and accountability for everyone. Stop running your business on an estimate and a handshake. Protect yourself with Contract App. Book your free demo or sign up today at www.contractapp.ca and use promo code TCL to get your first month for free. This message is proudly supported by The Construction Life.
Yeah.
You're dictated by that. And I learned early on, I remember having a conversation with, it was an inspector at the time. It's the handrail.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the width of the tread. It's the width of the handrail to the railing.
Yes.
That's your minimum. Because that's the amount of space that you're allowed there. So that's why some people get creative and they'll put those inset handrails into the wall. But obviously they look nice. They cost a lot more money. They give you the extra space.
Yeah.
That's what it does.
Right? And I actually, funny enough, in my past, again, we'll take the responsibility to happen, made that mistake. We ordered a staircase. You know, again, it was done by my trade, but it's my mistake completely, and I had to revise it and pay for it, of course. But yeah, they brought a stair in, and they were pretty much criticizing us for not actually explaining on the drawings where the 2 foot 10 exactly is.
Starts and finish.
Exactly. Yeah. And we had that issue, and I had to pay for it, and that was a great learning curve for me.
It's construction.
Yeah. Even though you would assume that stair companies would know.
Building, well, you know, the building fairness, part for the stair. In that argument, I would have that argument too with the stair company, because you guys have built far more staircases than
I have.
But
I'm not trying even to go there.
No, I know. But it's it's a pain in the ass at that point. But you learn these little lessons. That's the thing. And I just bring it up because we do talk about really tight homes sometimes.
Yeah,
Toronto's that are, you know, like they're always the semis. Yeah. And, I mean, I've built in homes that are probably as narrow as 13 feet, 14 feet. That's tight when you're trying to get a staircase, corridor, and a room somewhere. It's in there.
Which is a standard garden or
pretty much. Standard. Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, I mean, if you think about it, it's even wider on a garden suite at 20 feet.
If you have a double car garage.
If single, that's
sometimes we are being creative about a single.
Can you
as well.
Do a single car?
Of course.
Car? Yeah?
Of
that's
course.
Not going to be too narrow?
Well, usually it's not very single. It's a little bit more than that. It's just you've got a garage,
right?
And 1.5. Yeah, something like that. Yeah. So really what we do is we would probably keep. Usually we would keep the garage, 8-10 feet of the garage, do just a corridor to go up and down.
Yeah.
Yes, mechanicals under the stairs that, you know, to utilize the space, and just a second floor above. Open space, a studio, or, yeah.
What do you think maxes all the laneway in the garden, all these other units, and just for more density of population, where do you think it's going to go? You think it's just going to go up? Can't go really out anymore if you got these minimums.
Yeah, so I do believe it's going to go at least a couple more floors up.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So there'll be like multi-level units.
Yeah, because we can see that happening in other countries.
It is already happening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think it's going to come to us, and the bylaw is going to get less and less restricted. So, and I also think that regular building codes zoning bylaws will go less and less restricted.
They'll have to.
Building codes actually gonna be more and more restricted.
Yeah.
Because building tiny homes like that, when you build them higher, you know, there is wind loads and there is a lot of different things. So building codes, I believe, would get kind of more and more restrictive.
Engineering is going to be interesting because I remember my early days in construction having a conversation. I always like talking to engineers, right? It's their numbers and their parameters on what they design things or approve things is based on a dwelling being in the middle of a field all by itself. You can't factor that there's a structure right next to you that's going to block wind or whatever, right? You have to treat it as if it's all by itself. But for the most part, a lot of laneway or garden suites, they're usually the first one all by themselves that are going up.
That's exactly, so they're probably getting
a lot of wind, especially in extreme weather, right? Winter months.
I don't know if you know, there was this, not what, there is a building in Manhattan. Did you hear about...
Which one, the tallest, the narrow one?
The one on the three pillars and so anyways, I'll tell you a story.
There's a few floors that there's a cutout, like it's the air goes through it.
No. There was a building that was engineered in the middle of Manhattan. Maybe your viewers can actually put the name in the comments. I don't really remember exactly which building it was, but in the middle of Manhattan, it was designed by one of the biggest engineering firms. And there was a lot of case studies done about this building. And years after it was built, pretty much in the 90s, some student in a university in the US did a case study about the building and realized that this building can collapse every moment and that there was a mistake done while engineering it. It's a building that's still standing in Manhattan.
But based on his calculations?
Yeah. I hope, again, your viewers
can be able to... I got to look that up and check it out.
Look that up. And they were this kid, not a kid, a university student, was trying to contact the engineering firm, and nobody gave him the time of day. And eventually, they actually called to the administration of the company, explained to them that, you know, there's a problem. We're doing a case study about your building and we realize that it can collapse because of wind loads at every moment. Because, you know, every building has this area where they can... Yeah, it moves.
Yeah.
And eventually they had to fix it.
What was the fix?
That I don't know, and I'm not going to go into it.
I'm used to the water transfer on the top of the building. They've done that in the older buildings. They would have the balancing water systems where it actually it would counter the movement of the building, and then the water would go the other side. So then the movement of the building doesn't go off.
I
know that some of the taller structures around Central Park, they started putting pass-throughs on certain levels.
Yeah, for air to go through.
For the air to go right through.
Probably something that would have to do with that case study. And yeah, because that was very interesting.
I mean, you never want to see a building go down, but I do appreciate engineers pushing the limit of trying to push buildings.
I remember it was a narrow building. They couldn't build through the whole lot because there was a grandfathered, like a heritage building. I don't remember, in the corner. So it was like a square lot and one quarter of it was already a building. And they went above it or something.
They well overhanged it, huh?
Yeah, they went above it and like crazy. Can you imagine you're owning a company and then after you build 20 years or 30 years later, you realize that something you built can fall at every moment.
It could happen. It doesn't happen here in Toronto, but I'd like to see more challenging buildings being built here in Toronto so we have a better looking skyline instead of the typical boxes that are being built over and over, but...
Hey, look at Mississauga, Monroe buildings.
Yeah.
They're cute.
they're nice looking. Two towers right there, but that's it. But then after that, they built how many towers around them that look like general? There's one right now that's kind of, I call it a Jenga tower. It just has all these different pieces and stuff. But I mean, I look broad. I look in different countries and I see what buildings that they're building there compared to what's being built here. New York's good for that. You know,
but I do believe that zoning bylaws have a lot to do with it as well.
Of course,
this is something that, as pretty much what we just discussed, I think the leniency should be a little bit more out there.
It's funny to be in construction, start learning about air rights and like all these things that are associated with that most people don't even think about. Or even if you look at different older buildings back, like the Chrysler Building, the Empire State Building, the way they were built. And they're still standing. And at the time, they were the tallest ones at the time.
Yeah.
And they built things pretty interesting the way they did things.
Look at the Burj Khalifa now.
Yeah, it's insane.
And look at the project that they were looking to do. I don't even know. Did they start it or not? The project
the line
in Saudi Arabia. No.
Yeah, did the line, right?
Oh, the line. Yes.
I'm interested in that. I'm curious about it.
Holy.
They've been hearing rumors that they're not going to make it as long as they originally said.
I think they realize that it's just a little bit too, what would you say? It's just not going to work.
It's very ambitious.
Ambitious, yes. That's probably the word.
Yeah, it's very ambitious. But yeah. I like to see stuff like that here in Canada. I want to see things like that being built. Because it just is very, it educates and it inspires a whole new generation to get into construction at some level.
That's so usually like you would need tons of investments for that. Tons.
Yeah, you would need a bunch of companies to come to Canada and stay in Canada. Yeah. Right now, not a lot of people are looking at that. That's a whole other conversation.
Yeah, definitely.
But no, and you want more young people getting into construction. You want them to be excited. I mean, that's what... I'm a kid. I was in high school coming into Toronto, and I would take the GO train, and that's when they were building the Sky Dome at the time. And then I would look at it being erected and putting all the concrete. It kept on growing and growing and growing. Yeah. And I was fascinated by that. I was looking at it going, that's amazing. Like, I mean, old school technology, and you got this roof on a stadium completely, you know, obviously it leaked a few times in the beginning, but they solved that problem.
And also, that's what innovation is all about.
Yeah.
You got to have issues in order to solve them.
Yeah.
If you don't solve issues, that just means no innovations.
I mean, Toronto's got famous for traffic, but we should be looking at possibly either an elevated throughway or something like that, or even a tunnel. You know, Europe's all built with tunnels. Asia's all built with tunnels. Toronto needs more tunnels, but I don't want a corrupt tunnel building system to be taking care of that.
It's funny, though. You're looking at the construction systems that they're doing. They extended now the TTC subway line all the way.
The LRT? Or no?
The one that goes up north. All the way to, that goes pretty much up to Vaughan, goes through York University. So if you're looking into the subway line in Toronto, right, you have the, what is it? The red line, or you got the green line that goes horizontally, and you got the U.
Yeah, okay.
Right?
Yeah.
So the U used to start at Shepherd Station, which now they called it something else, but it used to be a Dunsview Station, now it's Shepherd Station.
Okay.
So what they did, they extended it to all the way to York, through York University and all the way to Highway 7.
Oh, wow.
In Vaughan.
Okay.
But if you're looking at the construction, the way it was done, they wouldn't dig under the ground. They would just dig a big hole, build it, and then cover it back.
Which makes more sense.
If you have the space. But if you're looking at downtown Toronto.
Well, that's how they did sections of the LRT, the Eglinton Crosstown.
True.
It shuts down arteries. That's a problem.
So you gotta find better ways I agree with you, which I'm actually supporting what you're saying. So unless if we want to get, I think the reason why we don't do that is that's the reason. Because if we do this kind of construction this way by just digging a huge hole and then covering back up, you're not going to be able to go through, you know, in downtown through all the neighborhoods in the city. You got to go tunneling. I agree with you. So I guess hopefully one day the technology is going to come here.
I don't know if it's a cost thing, but I just figure after... You know, the tunnel and other big tunnel operations that happened globally, it became more cost effective to do it. All it really meant was I did learn something fascinating about the tunnel. I think it was a tunnel. They ended up just burying the tunneling machine. It was more cost effective just to leave it there, like dig a hole and leave it there and encase it in concrete,
then to
take it out and then transport it and move it someplace else. It was going to be a lot more expensive to do that.
Interesting.
So they just buried, because it did what it had to do. It actually went through all that earth to get there. And all of a sudden they just buried it. And I'm like, okay, that's interesting.
But also think about it this way. It's actually a cool way of looking at it, because if something happens to the tunnel, you might have a machine already there.
It's already there.
I don't really know how it's going
to
work.
How you would get to it. But
you know what I mean? It's already there. You just somehow... If you could get a machine that can go forward and reverse. And
I don't know, Max. Like, you think like in today's time with technology and stuff, there's got to be a cost-effective way to construct a tunnel here in Canada, you know, because I know that, you know, Ford, he recently announced about he wanted to do a tunnel across the 401 to alleviate a lot of the traffic. And he was just talking about a
I don't know where he got the number from, but it was like $86 billion to do it.
I don't know where he got
it. And I just joked, it probably cost that much just for the consulting alone, just to figure out whether to do it, right?
So the thing is, I personally believe in order to get that done, you need to want people to start working on it. Yeah. There should be some kind of incentives and bids coming in from the government for that.
I would say globally bids.
Yeah.
I don't think
or globally.
Is,
yeah,
I don't think the problem with Canada is that they'll always look to homegrown companies to do it, but they may not be the best companies to do it.
I agree.
And I bring up the argument of Bombardier with the LRT, mm-hmm. right? So mm-hmm. they weren't the correct ones to go with. Mm-hmm. They weren't even the correct ones to do the streetcar revision they had all the new streetcars come in.
Yeah.
They failed at that. And so that's why I don't think that they're a good company. And then you look at Europe, it's full of trams. It's full of tunnels. It's full of everything. Yep. They're doing it far better. So let's bring them here and then we work with them, train the people here from them.
But you see, they will not come here to give you a quote.
No, they're going to come here to do the job. Like
they will come to bid on a job. Yes. And if they get the job done, you will know how much it's going to cost them. But again, it should come from, you know, from different areas.
I think so.
Yeah.
It's not, but I mean that like it's just
saying numbers. Sorry for cutting you out. Just saying numbers out of the blue is.
That's why I'm wondering where the politicians got these numbers from. Like, and the same thing with clients. They always ask you your numbers for your construction projects.
Yeah,
you know where you get your numbers from,
right?
Okay, but
numbers are coming. Numbers are, first of all, numbers should not be given without, you know, any, but concept.
Well, your numbers are connected to actual costs.
A budget number.
Yeah.
Connected to also experience.
Yeah.
Experience something that was done. So, yeah.
Three-way the world. These little puppies, I'm speaking from experience. I've actually installed these and I love these. Three-way prefabricated inside drywall corner, the first one-piece solution for perfect, crisp corners every time. With Three-way, you'll improve your quality, save on labor, and cut down on time. Traditional methods require three tapes, lots of sanding, and high skill. But with Three-way corners, they install in just a fraction of the time with fewer steps. It is adjustable for any angle, reinforced to cover gaps, and designed to blend seamlessly into the corner. Say goodbye to pesky touch-ups and hello to flawless finishes. Try Three-Way today and revolutionize your drywall game. Perfect corners every time. To purchase or check out some how-to videos to see the installs in action, visit threeway.ca or connect with them at 306-514-3768 or drop them an email at threewaytheworld@gmail.com. Connect with me, TCL, and stop by the studio and get a free pack on us for anyone to try. And trust me, I'm telling you, you'll love it. This message is proudly supported by The Construction Life. So you, when you present your numbers, you have got experience and you've got the costs associated with it. The clients are giving you their numbers based on what money they've either allocated for the project or what money that they've borrowed to do the project, right?
So, well, usually we'll try to work with clients' budgets. So, again, of course, not every client out there, which is actually another arguable question, is should the client tell you their budget? You know, because many clients out there would think that, well, I'm going to give him my budget. Clearly, he's going to tell me that's what it's going to cost.
Much?
Yeah, but also, I did have a situation where we design beautiful buildings, and never got there finishes-wise because we had to compromise because the budget wasn't there. Because the client said, yeah, don't worry about it. I think we're going to be able to get it done. I personally think that budget is very important.
Yes.
There should be a number. Okay. We want to build, let's say, an amazing house. We have $1.5 million. What can we do with it? And that's the property that we have. If I can design gold toilets in there, I will. Which I've done before. You know what I mean? If
you
know, I can't.
You bring up a really good point. You bring up a really good point about should the client in the initial consultation of discussing with a builder, let them know what their budget is. Because subconsciously, when you're putting the numbers together, that number is already fixated in your budget. You're already mm-hmm. thinking about that, where you're adding up numbers of what this is going to cost. Mm-hmm. You're already kind of steering into that direction. I think it's actually good that they don't give you the number and you price it out correctly, and then you go, okay guys, at that point you don't reveal your estimate number. I think you both sides reveal both numbers.
Yeah, well it's not a problem, but I usually try and kind of give a budget. Like I can tell a client how much one story, Speaking of laneways again, one story laneway or garden suite going to cost, two stories with basement, without basement. I know those numbers. But again, a client should also understand that they, the contractor that they pick, they have to trust them.
Yep.
You already invested hundreds of thousands of dollars out there. If you don't, if you invested it with a person you don't trust, call today, you're done. So because you invest, it's just, it's the same thing as you would go to a trading firm that holds your portfolio and you're going to tell them, I want to trade, without telling them what's the budget that they're going to trade with.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So now, most construction firms, our firm, is not dealing with, oh, you got more money, we're going to charge more money. We have pretty much lists for every trade and everything that we're doing. We charge walls are per linear foot. Yeah. So that's something that homeowners don't really understand. Then we charge a certain management fee on top, and that's why Katie is doing the work. So same as, I would say, all mid-size, you know, small-size construction companies.
Yeah, I agree.
But unfortunately, clients are coming from a different perspective, thinking that, well, I'm going to tell him that I have 500,000. He will build something for two, which is also an argument, not going to lie. But I'm happy to say that my clients and people that we deal with in Acadia realize that I'm very straightforward when it comes to it. And very happy.
Simple as that.
Simple
I know that, that the... Like, Max, I know the majority of laneways and garden suites and a lot of new construction these days is very minimalistic, very clean, simple, but
bright.
Yeah, and just the idea of doing a garden suite or a laneway suite in a traditional look like a brick, you know what I mean? With windows with mullion bars, like things like that would be kind of interesting to build, right?
It would be, but unfortunately, as we discussed in the beginning, laneways and garden suites are not very cheap to build.
Yeah.
And because they're most of the time for investment or for, you know.
You wouldn't put all those details into that.
It's not about detail. I would rather put a lot of details into the kitchen, into the bathroom. I would rather, if the budget is, let's say, let's just throw numbers out there for the interest. If we have a budget of a client, if we can build, let's say, a laneway for $500,000, the client has $550 as a budget, or $400 and $450, okay, it doesn't matter. I would tell the client, if it's for living, try and don't waste, it's a secondary home.
Yeah.
It's supposed to look as part of your property, yet again, not over, put a shadow over your dwelling.
Yeah.
Try to make sure that inside you got a good kitchen, like nice bright kitchen. You got a good bathroom. Maybe think towards a basement.
Yeah,
you know that laneway, for example, the one that we're doing with the elevator. That's going to be with a basement, so partially basement. So it was a 2-car garage building. So we still leave 1-car garage. Area.
And you're putting a full basement?
Yeah, on? One garage for a car, and no, half of it's going to be a basement.
So when you say a basement, but it'll be a full 8-foot high tall
of
basement?
Course. Yes, yeah. of course.
There's no restrictions on how deep you can go.
Nope. You can. There is no zoning restrictions on how big the area can be under. It's underground.
Yeah, you just can't build underneath your neighbor's lot.
I actually had an argument with one of city examiners, which luckily I won. On this garden suite, that it was a almost 3 months argument. They didn't want us to build a walkout from the garden suite because they were saying that you're building a secondary unit there. Okay. And I said, well, a walkout doesn't define by any bylaw a secondary unit. They said, well, but I can see that you're building. Going back and forth, eventually we had to talk to managers, and there is a specific bylaw that explains that a walkout should not be considered as part of, because it's underground, as part of building area. And she was upset with me. You know, those examiners thinking that she was upset. But eventually, we got it done.
Understand what the bylaws are written or how they're written.
Yeah, and unfortunately, that's not the case.
It's not always the case, eh? But I mean, they get stuck in their ways too. They think that they have the experience, and then they want to just keep on carrying that. But I've had that happen to me before, where you've had certain inspectors challenge you,
personal opinions,
and then I challenge it, and then all of a sudden I find out that I'm correct and they're incorrect.
Yeah, but they get upset with it.
But my first thought is, how many other people have they said the exact same thing?
They intimidated and people went back
exactly, and they never challenged it. So I'm like, that's where it's not fair.
Which is another thing that I'm doing in my company, by the way. That's great. You said it. I'm always telling my consultants, like architectural technologists that work in our company. I say, guys, you're working for the clients, not the city. Your job is to challenge the city. If the building code dictates that you can do something, you're not just going to go and agree with the examiner. And I find that a lot of technologists, technicians, architectural technologists, technicians that finish school and come and work in my company, they think that working with the municipality, it's a communication. It's like, oh, what if I do this? No, we don't like that. Okay, I'm going to propose that. And I'm explaining to them, guys, this is not a conversation.
No.
There are building codes. If they challenge building codes, you come to me and we discuss that and see whether it's legitimate or not.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, we're there to work for our clients. We had a lot of situations. I'll give you an example. Silly, but it happened. In the city of Toronto, we had a client that wanted us to finish a basement with a bar, a wet bar.
Okay.
Not a problem. To finish a basement is legal. Wet bar in the basement is legal. Bedroom in the basement is legal. Perfect. So we did a design. We submitted it to the city. And all of a sudden, we get the examiner telling us, no, you're not going to get that. Of course, when that
kind
of
thing. You're not going to get what, the bar?
We're not going to allow that. Remove the sink in the bar. I said, well, when that happens, I start my communication with the examiner right away, because I realize it's on a different level. So anyways, I start my communication and I say, well, there is no code that does not allow a sink in a bar. Yeah, but I want you to remove it. I said,
that's not a response.
I appreciate that you want something. I want a lot of things. That's not going to happen. Let me talk to your manager. Well, there's nothing to talk to the manager. We just don't allow that. I said, yes, you do allow sinks in a bar. I sent her the building code section that shows that it's allowed. But eventually she sends me back. And that was when Airbnb just started. A Google ad for Airbnb. And she said, well, they're renting it illegally. So they use it as an Airbnb unit.
Okay. So you can...
Right?
Yeah.
So what I've done is I said, okay, that's something that they did previously. I'm the new consultant. I don't know what they're doing now. Right now it's a basement and I'm proposing a basement with a bar. And right now nobody's renting there. Send me a document, which I'm going to sign. Well, not me. I mean, the owner going to sign that they will not use it for the purposes of renting.
Yeah.
And it's got approved.
Did all of Toronto ban Airbnbs?
No, they don't ban Airbnbs. It's just that Airbnb is a secondary unit. It has its own fire codes.
So you have to apply by that then.
You have to apply with specific fire separations.
Yeah, everything. You have to build it a certain way.
People don't really know, but you should not have two kitchens in one dwelling.
It's illegal. I know that.
There you go.
Yeah,
but people will think, well, what are you talking about? There's everywhere in the world, there are kitchens.
The European mentality. There's always a second kitchen.
But no. And actually, you know, it's kind of makes sense because, you know, you have somebody who is cooking food in the basement. You don't know about it. All of a sudden, they fall asleep. Fire starts. You have no time to run away. If there's no fire. Although it's arguable, right? All this fire. I see that on your eyes and I kind of agree with you. But yeah, but.
Well, you quickly learn that there's different ways of doing it, and there's also, I mean, it's you're right, because you said it earlier, that it does cost, and I would probably agree with you, it's about 20% increase in cost, because you have to, there's different ways of doing it. You can do it as a 2x4 wall and double layer rated X. You can do a 2x6 wall if you wanted to upgrade it. It has to have rock or some sort of insulation in between.
Like, are you talking about walls or ceiling?
It could be, well, the walls and ceiling require rock wall in it. The last time I did it.
Not in a basement, no.
Not a basement. You have
if
to
you're
have, for sound, so you have to.
Oh, sound. Yes.
If it's a second unit, if it's becoming a legal second unit, you have to please fire and sound codes.
Yeah.
So the rock wall is for sound, and the fire code is the drywall, and then resilient channel is for sound. So you can go resilient channel, but then the ceiling, I think you require resilient channel, rock wall, or double layer.
So there are two assemblies.
Yeah. Exactly.
That's what you were talking about. Building code allows you two assemblies.
Yeah.
One assembly pretty much is the first one you were talking about, which is sound insulation, resilient channels, and X type X drywall, which is 45 minutes fire separation.
Yeah.
Second assembly is it's pretty much part 11 of the building code, which is for existing conditions.
Yes.
Because nobody expects you to start ripping your ceiling apart. It's pretty much when you go with double layer of Type-X drywall. That's about it. I prefer the first one personally because it's easier to rip everything apart to make sure that nobody upstairs is listening to your arguments or the other way around. But yeah, those are the two assumptions.
Where they get you, where you quickly learn anybody who's listening and they want to be working on these projects is if you start running anything that's mechanically connected to the basement second unit has to still be run on your side and not the main dwelling side.
Yes.
And what I'm talking about is a dryer running exhaust. It can't go into a joist cavity and then you just cover it up. You have to go into the joist cavity now and put double layer.
Exactly. Seal everything around.
Seal around it.
And what, again,
it becomes a challenge, but you have to plan
it. You just gave me an idea where problems can come up. So imagine even us, you know, even myself, I can get myself in this kind of problem when you throw price out there. When I look into finishing a basement, you know, drywall, all that, fire, insulation, it's all nice and dandy. But you just mentioned fire dumpers.
Yep.
Each dumper to install costs around $500.
Yeah.
Every vent that you have has to have a fire dumper.
Yep.
Who remembers that? When you're standing there with a client, you got two bedrooms, assuming that you're revising, two bedrooms, living area, bathroom. That's like $2,000 right there.
Yeah. So you got four vents right there. I know.
And that's what I'm telling clients, that it's not the big stuff. It's the small stuff.
Stop being chained to your construction company. That's what Revelate delivers to contractors like you who are trying to figure out AI and automations. I hear it all the time with guys I talk to, and it sounds like they spend way more time on things that waste money. Here's how Revelate does it. They study your business. They build custom AI software and automation tech to fit your process. They train you and your staff so you can save 50% of your time on the stuff that slows you and your projects down. You got into the trades to build things, not to be buried under endless admin work and broken systems. I know every day feels like you're solving the same problems instead of moving forward. That's why Revelate was created. They grew up in the construction industry and have been a part of it for more than 15 years. They know the grind and they work to fix it. Within weeks, you and your team and your business are saving half of your time on the stuff that keeps you from getting home and enjoying life. No more nights buried in the paperwork, just more time building and living. Stop being stuck in chaos. Let Revelate help you build something better. Book a demo. It's an easy chat and it's free. Book time now. www.revelate.com or on IG at revelate.inc or call them at 416-474-5755. This message is proudly supported by The Construction Life.
Going back to what we talked before, if you're having a contractor that threw their prices in the air and they started to work and now they see in drawings, oh, you need four fire dumpers. Probably they don't even know that those are existing.
Yeah.
But they go check it out, realize that it's $500 from a quote from the HVAC contractor. It's like, okay, we didn't discuss that. Yeah, but you gave us a price for the full basement.
It's funny because the last one I did was a second unit for myself. Mm-hmm. And I had one inspector. This is the challenging situation where... And it was a challenging around the smoke detectors. So I
whether
know
they're interconnected or not.
Well, no, I know the code. First of all, it has to be interconnected. Second, all the new ones in the new dwelling have to be 3-in-1s. So they have to be strobe, smoke, and carbon. And where I didn't agree with him was he came into the main dwelling to make sure, confirm that they were interconnected. And he said to me that you have to change this one and upstairs
and
to a 3-in-1.
And that's existing conditions.
And I said to him, no, I do not. And he goes, yes, you do. And he just kept on telling me, yes, you do. And I said, I do not. If it's an existing one on the main dwelling, you do not have to change it. So I challenged him. And I got his supervisor, and then she went into the code, and she goes, yeah, you're correct. You don't have to change the two that are in the main dwelling, but yes, the three that were in the unit, they have to be 3-in-1.
You're absolutely correct.
Right? Yeah. And, but the thing is, that's existing where the situation condition. Was where I said to his supervisor, I said to her, how many homes has he gone in and convinced the homeowner to change all the other smoke alarms in the existing?
And how many homeowners were so afraid to say anything because they wanted to pass.
I know. I don't have a problem. You're absolutely correct. It wasn't the first time.
Yeah, but because when you talk, you talk from knowledge.
Yeah.
And you can always see knowledge. You can always see knowledge and experience.
It's in the code. You can look it up online. You can do this. You can do that. I know.
Well, not everybody can read the code.
But it's nice also because of this show, you get a lot of friends. You start having co-consultant friends and you start reaching out to them going, listen, I've got this. And I had another situation with a window in a basement that was being increased in size. And then he was challenging me on the bottom of the window was too close to the footing of the dwelling of the foundation wall, that it was affecting the compromise of the actual foundation wall. This was a young kid and he was wrong. And
of course.
And so all of a sudden,
he doesn't even understand how foundations work.
He actually measured it, right? And then all of a sudden I said to him, hang on a sec, you're not correct on this. And then I spoke to a code consultant. And that's when I discovered that the measurement is not taken at the top of the footing. It's taken at the bottom of the footing.
Yep.
So by us being at the bottom of the footing, we were actually within 3 or 4 inches of what we were allowed. And it wasn't a compromise. But then it went back and forth where I was speaking with him. And then I involved in supervisor. He became very full of attitude. And then I finally spoke with the supervisor. Nobody ever came back to the dwelling. I just kept on speaking back and forth on behalf of the homeowner. And then all of a sudden I proved correctly, right? Because the actual code consultant said, Manny, write down this code number. And then he gave me the actual code. And then I sent it off to them. They reviewed it, got back to me.
Good for you.
You know, you're correct. We're passing this. We're finalizing the walkthrough. You get any occupancy. It's all fine. And then I was a little bit of a dick. And I just said, listen, is your junior inspector going to send an apology, please? And he never did, and I was
for you, the time that he wasted, yeah. Wasted for you,
because the you money, the way you made me look in front of my client, when I told the client, I go, listen, I know we're in compliance. I know that we are allowed to do this. I would never have looked at your drawings, and I would never have said, okay, we can't do this, right?
You know what upsets me the most? Because I have those situations on daily basis. What upsets me the most is when your client gets to you and tells you, yeah, I you know what, Manny, great, or Max, you know what, great, let's just do what he asks. Honestly, we're wasting time. We're wasting money. But hold on.
I know.
Listen up. Imagine you're doing a secondary unit. Your client is a business owner. Every month that you're wasting for your client costs them money.
Of course.
And you're in a situation where you're between the client that tells you, just do what they want. And you know you're right. But they tell you, just do what they want because we don't want to waste another month's worth of rent because we're paying mortgage on it versus the inspector that should be knowing their work and they don't. And you're like, okay, if I keep arguing with them, I'm actually doing something bad for my client. I'm wasting their time.
I know,
if I don't argue with them, I look bad in front of my client because I'm actually right. What do I do? So this is the situations where,
sometimes some people take the easy way
They should
way
not
out.
Put you in those situations.
I know. But I knew that this young inspector was just... Something about him was off. He came in. He had a little bit of attitude. We did a lot of structural changes on this project. But they were all legitimate. They were all engineered. They were proper. Everything was correct. Everything was correct. And so that's why when he was challenging me, I said, listen, man, it's just really easy. I want to get your supervisor involved. That's all it is. It's going to be really simple, right? And we're going to go through this and we'll figure it out. But hopefully he learned his lesson and then he didn't do this again to somebody else because I don't like them doing it to other people. That,
there's always
like
going to be
said,
anyone.
That maybe that they will just...
They put you as a contractor in a bad place. They put you in a very... They make the client undermine you and say, well, he's the inspector. He knows. No, he doesn't.
No, he doesn't know. They're human beings. Yeah. They make mistakes. I've had great inspectors on sites we've had conversations. He goes, I didn't realize that, man. That's really interesting, right? I'm like, yeah, cool. You know, do you want espresso? Do you want anything else? What's going on?
I can give you another funny example, which is actually good for everybody to know. And that's something that New Codes came up with. So now, City of Toronto, and I'm assuming it's going to get into other municipalities as well. As I said, they allow triplexes. Before, triplex would be a development, an apartment building, not anymore.
Yeah.
So a lot of people start renovating for triplex. And we have clients that, you know, trusted me. They bought a house. It's a raised bungalow, okay? Semi-detached with a party wall in between.
Okay.
Just so that you understand the situation a little bit. Side exit, backyard door, sliding door, and all that. And anyways, we're doing the permits for them, submitted to the city, and they denied the drawings, saying that our party wall proposal all of a sudden is incorrect as per new codes. So we started looking into the new codes, which I don't know if you know, but the new codes in part 9, which is residential, shows... So there's a difference in definition between a party wall and a firewall. Okay?
Okay.
So they now saying that in order to get a triplex, and that's where the problems are, because it's still having the codes from when a triplex was an apartment building, so now they wanted our client to upgrade their party wall to a firewall. Now, what does that mean? A party wall, usually, if you have two semi-detached buildings, you would have a block or, you know, fire partition.
You have a division of some sort of thing.
Right? You would have a wall, which is a fire and you would have a roof. And the wall would stop just a little bit under the roof.
So they want you to continue to the roof line.
They want you to continue to the roof line as if it's a firewall, not a party wall.
Yeah.
Again, we had an argument for 2.5 months. Same thing. We involved our code consultant. And eventually they said, well, her report is very incorrect. We don't really like her report, but we're going to give it to you. And of course, you know what I said? I said, thank you. Because I have a lot of experience understanding who I'm dealing with.
Yeah.
I don't want you to waste more of my client's time. Because meanwhile, they were paying for an empty house, not being able to start renovation, not being able to do anything. Of course, there's a limited amount of money that they have for this whole operation. But just as you said, who's going to pay them for the 2 months that they wasted mortgage? Who's going to pay us for the time of us needing, first of all, who's going to pay them for the code consultants because they had to pay it, right?
You know, they just come back. The one they come back, they don't come back with apologies, but I get it. I've had a code consultant, a retired code consultant on the show before, and the primary objective of any city examiner is not to get sued.
So they're like, that's exactly. So
they're careful with how they position things, and they'll never apologize because they don't want to get into a legal situation.
Of course. As soon as they involve a lawyer,
that's
like thousands of dollars per hour.
I know, but we want to get, the objective here is what? To get the approval of the drawings, to get a permitted drawing, and then I understand that it's not an approved drawing, it's an issue drawing. I understand all that stuff. And then build it in compliance to the code, the current code and what's going on.
Yeah.
But we also have the right as builders to use new materials that are being signed off by engineers that are attaching their certificate with it. And you guys should be more than willing to accept that if it's all valid. So I feel that builders and architects and designers do a lot of homework to make their dwellings better for their clients. And the examiners in the city, maybe because they're understaffed, don't do as much homework to understand what's new and what's interesting to build.
It's not their understaff. It's not as educated as they should be.
Yeah. Yeah, period. I know.
And I appreciate
it. We do the homework. Yeah. We do a lot more homework.
Because we need to. We build. We use those materials.
But you're also doing the homework as a sales pitch for future clients. Mm-hmm. This is a project that we did. Here's a challenge that we came across. And this is the solution we came up with. Then you did that because of the R&D that you did associated with that. And you had the right to challenge the city examiner for that. Yep. So then it gives them opportunity going, well, if you're going to fight for that person, then we want you to fight for us, right? Yep. And then we want to create that dwelling with you now.
Listen, we had an examiner that we dealt with that wasn't aware of a fireproof paint.
Yeah.
Well, you're saying yeah because it's common sense to you. To him, it wasn't. And it took us a month. And when we had all the specs, everything stamped by the manufacturer, you know,
yeah,
we
submitted it. Certified, our, yeah.
No. You can't fire it. It took a while with having supervisors involved. But eventually, those people will be the supervisors.
I did a job with cellulose, and that became a whole thing. Because it was one of the only, like, a few jobs ever in Ontario to be done with cellulose. And I had to get all kinds of certification from the manufacturer to give it to the city. The inspector was a super nice guy, down to earth. He was so nice to the point wherever I got a complaint, he always stopped by just for a coffee. And he goes, I have to come here because I got to follow through with these noise complaints that I'm hearing. Mm-hmm. I understand that you're working within the bylaws, so you're allowed to do what you are doing, Manny. But I have to come. And then he was fascinated by the cellulose. He wanted to get more information about the cellulose, right? It was all newspaper print base and everything like that. And it was a new way to insulate. It wasn't the traditional way. So then that's what I like yeah, about it, right? We got to do the 12 questions there, Max. I appreciate it. Everything, it's good conversation. We cover everything, I think.
It was awesome.
Yeah.
More
Acadia Design Consultants. You can reach them at info@acadiadc.ca, and then also find them on Instagram under Acadia_DC. Their phone number is 647-478-9292, and their website is www.acadiadc.ca. You guys do solid work, man. Honestly, you guys good work. Ready for these?
Yeah.
A person you would trade places with for a day.
Isaac Newton.
Oh, that's a good one. That's a good one. I like that one. Guilty pleasure.
I really like sometimes during the day to decompress, walk around a hardware store and watch, just look at tools.
It is soothing, huh? It is soothing. Until people start asking you for questions. Where can I find this? What is your least favorite tool?
Paint sprayer.
I don't like it.
Can't paint for shit.
Biggest risk you ever took?
So I got two of those.
Okay.
So first of all, it's getting married.
That's a risk? Okay.
But jokes aside, no. Putting my career on hold to go back for architectural studies.
For the education.
Yeah. And I think that was great.
But it's paying off.
Yeah.
100%. Best compliment you ever got?
Did I make things sound very simple?
That's a good one. From a client?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Many, many clients that I talk to, I always tell them, well, listen, it's simple. You just need to know what you do.
Steps.
Yeah.
One, two, three. Favorite beverage?
Are we talking alcoholic?
Anything. Any kind of
beverage. Regular beverage is water. when it comes to alcoholic, I really like my cognac.
Nice. What never fails to make you laugh?
Demolition face.
That makes you laugh?
Yes.
Destroying something?
No. Not the destroying part. The part where you see what's going on behind walls.
Oh, what you discover. What you see what's been chopped out.
When you're demolishing something and you're seeing
what's going on. That's pretty funny. It is pretty funny, actually. Worst piece of advice you ever got?
Just do what your client says.
Oh, that's not your job.
Yeah.
I
should advise the client to do the right thing.
Yes.
But believe it or not, people ask, listen, they pay you money for it. Just do it. No. I'm not going to do something bad for them just because that's what they ask for.
No. What profession other than your own would you like to attempt one day?
So I would probably want to do construction law, because dealing with bylaws and building codes and all that.
Yeah.
Something construction law is something that fascinates me.
Interesting. Favorite curse word?
Asshole.
Favorite vehicle, any mode of transportation?
F-150.
Last question. If heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at those pearly gates?
Show me these drawings.
I like that one. Show me the drawings. Max, thanks so much, man. So nice to finally meet
you. Thank you very much, man. You're awesome. It was great.
Thank you very much. It was a great show. And come back anytime and continue doing the good work, man.
Thank you very much.
That's it. We're out of here.